Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show. Conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. If you'd like to call into the show, the phone number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Today I want to talk about our friends and heroes in the so-called mainstream media. You know, those wonderful elitist snobs who know so much more than you, many of whom are highly paid under our capitalist system, but who usually lean hard to the political left, never missing an opportunity to show you how wonderful socialism is and will be for this country, although they don't always like to characterize it as socialism per se. These are the people who want to redistribute your wealth while expecting to keep theirs. The ones who hate America, white people, capitalism, Christianity, and Trump, who see the world ending in the next few years if we don't stamp out fossil fuels, motor vehicles, jet airplanes, and meat, except, of course, that which is kept around for their use and consumption. I learned long ago that you don't make it, you aren't admitted to the hallowed halls of the mainstream media news establishment unless you profess and can be relied upon to spout the rhetoric of the political left and constantly propagandize for its front organization, the Democratic Party. Now, for the most part, our mainstream news media organizations are filled with these leftist ideologues, and they crank out endless wild-eyed scare stories about how bad things always are, how the country's full of racism and white nationalists and white supremacists, how Donald Trump's a racist and a homophobe and an Islamophobe and has all manner of other terrible traits, along with his millions of followers. The country's being destroyed by wanton materialistic consumption, yours, not theirs, and climate change, and the evil opposition to millions upon millions of migrants who only want to come here to seek a better life that we owe them because of our long history of racist oppression. And on it all goes. We're bombarded daily with this stuff. I heard recently that Americans spend an average of 200 hours a month watching television and or following social media. Is it any wonder that so many of these people out there who are under the spell of the media elites have no idea what's really going on? Speaking of just the so-called news media, I'd like to read a few passages from the conservative radio and television host and author Mark Levin's new book, Unfreedom of the Press. In the introduction, he states, "Unfreedom of the press is about how those entrusted with news reporting in the modern media are destroying freedom of the press from within. Not government oppression or suppression, not President Donald Trump's finger pointing, but present-day newsrooms and journalists. Indeed, social activism, progressive groupthink, Democratic Party partisanship, opinion and propaganda passed off as news, the staging of pseudo-events, self-censorship, bias by omission, and outright falsehoods are too often substituted for old-fashioned objective fact-gathering and news reporting. A self-perpetuating and reinforcing mindset has replaced independent and impartial thinking, and the American people know it. Thus, the credibility of the news media has never been lower." Well, I'm not so sure that many people know about it. I know many people do, but there's so many more who seem to be, as I said, under the spell of these people. Further on in the introduction, Levin continues, "Unlike the early Patriot Press," and he's referring to our country's beginnings, "today's newsrooms and journalists are mostly hostile to America's founding principles, traditions, and institutions. They do not promote free speech and press freedom, despite their self-serving and self-righteous claims. Indeed, they serve as societal filters, attempting to enforce uniformity of thought and social and political activism centered on the progressive ideology and agenda. Issues, events, groups, and individuals that do not fit the narrative are dismissed or diminished. Those that do fit the narrative are elevated and celebrated. Of course, this paradigm greatly influences the culture, the government, and the national psyche. It defines a media-created reality, whether or not it has a basis in true reality, around which individuals organize their thoughts, beliefs, and in some cases, their lives. Well, there he is admitting it, I think, that that many people are under the influence, under the spell of these people. Now, I had referred to this in a previous program, but further on in the book, Levin cites a study by what he calls the nonpartisan Harvard Kennedy School's Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy. And it states, among its conclusions, Trump's attacks on the press have been aimed at what he calls the mainstream media. Six of the seven U.S. outlets in our study, CBS, CNN, NBC, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and The Washington Post, are among those he's attacked by name. All six portrayed Trump's first 100 days in highly unfavorable terms. CNN and NBC's coverage were the most unrelenting. Negative stories about Trump outpaced positive ones by 13-1 on the two networks. Trump's coverage on CBS also exceeded the 90% negative mark. Trump's coverage exceeded 80% level in the New York Times, 87% negative, and the Washington Post, 83% negative. The Wall Street Journal came in better below that level, 70% negative. A difference largely attributable to the journal's more frequent and more favorable economic coverage. Fox was the only outlet where Trump's overall coverage nearly crept into positive territory. 52% of Fox's reports with a clear tone were negative, while 48% were positive. Fox's coverage was 34% percentage points less negative than the average for the other six outlets. Trump's coverage during his first 100 days was not merely negative in overall terms, it was unfavorable on every dimension. There was not a single major topic where Trump's coverage was more positive than negative. Moving on to another new book out there, Unmasked, Big Media's War Against Trump, it's called, by the Media Research Center's L. Brent Bozell and Tim Graham. Here's what the authors have to say in the preface to their book. Every elected Republican since Dwight Eisenhower, Nixon, Reagan, Bush 41, and Bush 43, has been treated with nothing but hostility. And they put in parentheses, Ford doesn't count. He was both unelected and too irrelevant for anyone to care. Continuing, the hostility extends to most GOP presidential candidates as well. Dozens in the last 50 years have been kneecapped by the news media in pursuit of their mission to elect their Democratic alternative. But Trump is in a category of his own. The national news media were obsessed with the man from the start, laughing at the idea of this buffoon running, and then when his campaign was underway, ridiculing him at every opportunity, still dismissing any thought that he might win the party's nomination as his numbers continued to climb. When he became the nominee and posed a threat even they couldn't ignore, they waged scorched earth warfare against him, breaking all the rules of journalistic ethics in a desperate attempt to change the outcome of the election. It wasn't that they thought he could win. They didn't. It was that he needed to be destroyed just in case. But he won, and they've been on a jihad ever since to remove him from office. Isn't that nice? I wanted to mention a little bit more here in chapter 5 in this book. Very good book, by the way. The authors continue, the nation's top two newspapers responded to Donald Trump's election with arrogant new slogans, virtually declaring war on him. The New York Times aired TV ads proclaiming, quote, truth. It's more important than ever, unquote. Apparently, truth hadn't been that important when Barack Obama or Bill Clinton was president. The Times also sold T-shirts with that slogan, pairing with a Japanese fashion company, and sold them for $300. A pretty funny way to fight Red State, Make America Great Again Populism. The Washington Post chose a new motto that is now published on its masthead every morning. Quote, democracy dies in darkness, unquote. Look out. Trump was going tyrannical, and by God, the Washington Post was going to stop that. Yes, very interesting stuff here. Among the most rabidly anti-Trump media organizations is CNN, originally known as Cable News Network, but also known to its detractors as the Communist News Network and the Clinton News Network. Here are a few sound bites from just one perusal of CNN's programs recently. Please play soundbite one.
Here's the proof. You want to talk about bullying? How about this? Kayleigh McEnany, I can't have you on the show anymore. You know why? You're clearly not working for me anymore. You're not working for me anymore. I thought you worked for me. I thought you used to take care of me. When people used to ask you about me, you'd say good things. Now you're being fair? Now you're pushing back? That's what he said about Fox News. You talk about
the
bullying.
The president's not bullying anyone. The president is lied about constantly.
On Fox News?
Literally time and time again. He's frustrated with media coverage.
On Fox News?
He's frustrated with media coverage. He's fighting for the people in his movement. He didn't say Fox News should work for him. That's, again, not what
the tweet said. He said they're not working. Put the tweet back up.
No, he said they're not working for us. The network as a whole is not working for his movement, meaning they can't watch
because Fox isn't working for us anymore.
You are again.
They were never supposed
again.
To be working for him. You didn't think they were working for you,
this
did they?
This is more fake news. Literally in the last 24 hours, you took Stephanie Grisham out of context. You take the president
out of
context.
I'm not taking anybody out of context.
MSNBC lies about the president and our campaign manager. This is why Harvard, by the way, says 90% of the news coverage of the president is negative. Harvard's words.
No, that's not what Harvard said. Harvard said 90% of the coverage is negative. They didn't say why. The why is his mouth. And his actions. If he didn't lie, if he didn't take things out of context, if he didn't demonize people for being different, if he didn't make it okay to be bigoted, then he would not get the same kind of criticism.
He doesn't lie.
Look at this. There can be no rational debate about whether this president has lied to you. More than we have ever tracked since tracking began. That is the case. The argument to make is how those around him enable and therefore own the same behavior. Exhibit A is, of course, his campaign press secretary from last night. You don't think this president has lied to the American people?
No,
you have to answer that question first. He has never lied to the American people.
No, I don't think the president
has lied. Kayleigh McEnany, your credibility will be shot with my audience if you don't back off that statement. And I was right. Now, we know what's happening here. She's saying that President Trump isn't lying when he says he's already built the wall. When he says Muslim people cheered in the streets of New Jersey after 9/11. When he says his dad was born in Germany. When he says a dozen other things, all fugazi. What's their playbook? Give no ground. Deny any lie. And that move is now shared by too many who work for you and those who say they uphold conservative values, like this man. I'm not asking you why they lie.
I can't look inside.
I'm asking you to condemn them for lying because they shouldn't lie to the American people.
I'm not going to condemn them for lying. I don't have any idea why he didn't go to that meeting. I have no idea.
Yeah, but you know that they lied about the reason that he didn't go.
Why do I get to be the person that determines whether someone who else speaks is lying or not?
Who actively interfered in our elections in 2016 and 2018, and who is plotting to do it again in 2020. That Vladimir Putin. Yep, Vladimir Putin, that guy. The president of the United States insisting Putin should be welcomed back into the group, even though Russia, the master of spin, at it again. Rewriting history, otherwise known as distracting and deflecting. President tweeting today, G7 was a great success for this country. It wasn't. Not at all. And we're only learning now just how bad things got behind closed doors. President arguing fiercely with this country's allies during a dinner Saturday night, okay? Go along with me. What was he arguing about? Vladimir Putin, of course. Putin, who was kicked out of the then G8 when he illegally seized Crimea, who he still holds to this day, who actively interfered in our elections in 2016 and 2018, and who is plotting to do it again in 2020. That Vladimir Putin. Yep, Vladimir Putin, that guy. The president of the United States insisting Putin should be welcomed back into the group, even though Russia has done absolutely nothing to deserve it. That according to two diplomatic officials and a senior U.S. official who tell CNN things got especially heated when Angela Merkel, Boris Yeltsin, and Justin Trudeau insisted that as long as Russia still holds Crimea, readmitting Putin is a non-starter. Those sources say the president took every opportunity to try to make the case for Putin, even interrupting discussions about fires in the Amazon and about Iran to insist that Russia should be part of the conversation. And they say the president got more and more combative as the dinner wore on. But of course, he wasn't taking Putin's side behind closed doors. He did it in front of live cameras, too.
But first, the most complicated relationship in Washington, one that affects all of us. It is Trump and Fox, Fox and Trump. The president gets his briefings from Fox. He gets led by Fox, often gets misled by Fox. He hires people from Fox. He fires people based on what he hears on Fox. And he firms up his base through the network. But he has also been complaining about the network. In fact, more than 20 times this year by my count. This week, he claimed that Fox has changed so much that the network, quote, isn't working for us anymore. What an incredible admission. Trump really thinks Fox belongs to him and his supporters. It's unlike anything we've ever seen in modern media. Forget how Fox's critics view the network. Trump is saying that he views the network as an arm of the White House and the GOP. Now, I think his bursts of anti-media messages lately against Fox and Axios, The Post, and CNN reflect insecurity. With the re-election campaign on his mind, he doesn't want voters to know about the messy reality of life in the Trump White House. He hates the leaks, and he really hates when people, especially on Fox, cover his Democratic rivals. So he lashes out. That's what keeps happening. He sees segments like this, with a DNC spokeswoman being interviewed on Fox. Now, his own spokesman was on the air just a few minutes later, but Trump hated seeing the Democratic spokeswoman. So think about this. One day, he's promoting Jeanine Pirro's book. The next day, he's saying Fox is so bad that we, again, the word we, have to start looking for a new news outlet. And then what did he do the next day? He called in to Brian Kilmeade's Fox News radio show. This is Trump whiplash. It's caused by his impulsiveness and his need for attention. Look what he said to Brian Kilmeade.
I'm not happy with Fox. I think, you know, people think Fox is for me. Fox is good. Look, Sean and Laura and Tucker has really been very good for, well, Tucker's a little tricky, but that's okay. You were a solid, I used to say you were a solid six, maybe a seven, but you're getting much better.
Hey, congrats, Kilmeade. You're a nine now. See, here's what happens, all right? When Trump gets ticked off about something he sees on Fox, his friends at the network try to calm him down. They try to remind him that all the highest rated shows on Fox are the pro-Trump shows. From Fox and Friends in the morning to the Ingram angle at night. Now, that's what happened this week. He heard that reminder again, and that's what led to this tweet on Saturday. He went out there congratulating Sean Hannity on his ratings. Trump wants sycophants on the air, not reporters, and certainly not DNC spokespeople.
Everyone loves to say that the polls got it all wrong in 2016, but that's not entirely the case. What kind of lessons did we learn from the polling of 2016 that we can apply to the 2020 presidential race? Take a look at the final results of the 2016 presidential election. Hillary Clinton had some 3 million votes more than Donald Trump. The polling leading up to the election told that story. Across the last 4 months of the election, Hillary Clinton at 47, Donald Trump at 43%, well within this margin of error of 2.5 to 3.5 points. Pay attention to this. These numbers are not exact, and you need to think about that error margin as you're thinking about each candidate's number in a poll when you read it. Take a look at Michigan. Michigan is a state that Donald Trump won by a razor-thin margin. But what were the final polls saying about Michigan in the lead-up to the election? Hillary Clinton 42, Donald Trump 38. This is at the margin of error. This poll should be seen as it's anybody's game. The other thing to note here, of course, is the huge undecided. Add up 42 and 38, you get 80%. There's 20% more of the electorate out there. And what we know from the exit polls is that late deciders broke to Donald Trump, specifically in those critical states of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Time now to talk about the Trump economy and the president's trade war. As of this morning, new tariffs are in place on more than $100 billion worth of Chinese goods. The list includes clothing, shoes, sheets and pillows, sports equipment, kitchenware, and even diapers. Tariffs are a tax on imported goods and likely mean higher prices for American consumers. Even some top Republicans worry the trade war could also trigger an election year recession. One of them is U.S. Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania. But here's what President Trump thinks of that.
So what does Pat Toomey want me to do? Does he want me to say, let me put my hands up, China, continue to rip us off. Let me give up right now, China, even though we're winning. Let me give up right now. You continue to take out $400, $500, $600 billion out of our hide. Continue to steal our intellectual property. Continue to do all of the other horrible things you've been doing to us for 30 years.
Now, to be sure, unemployment still is near historic lows and consumer spending remains strong. But a poll out last week illustrates the threat the president is facing. For the first time since he took office, more Americans say the economy is getting worse than it is getting better.
Now, so much for the CNN perusal here. Now, you may have recognized a few of the talking heads there, starting out with CNN's Chris Fredo Cuomo and Brian Stelter, among the leftist ideologues spouting away. You see, it's all there. Trump lies all the time to the American people. Trump is taking Putin's side. Trump thinks he has Fox News in his pocket. He doesn't like it when they don't treat him just right. And, oh, yes, of course, Hillary got 3 million votes more than Trump. So the polls got it right all along. Yeah. Of course, we talked about that massive turnout in California, which gave Hillary the majority of those votes over Trump. If you took that away, he supposedly won by over 1.5 million votes or around 1.5 million votes. With the popular vote. So we can go on and on about that. Of course, it argues and argues. I thought it might be interesting to relate what Moselle and Graham had to say about Stelter and Cuomo in their books afterward, titled The Top 10, Who Hates Trump the Most? About Brian Stelter, they say, Stelter hosts Reliable Sources, which is billed as a show analyzing the media. It's not. It's a weekly red alert to warn CNN's viewers that Trump is a dictator who wants to shut down the free press on the road to perdition. The lectures are endless and obnoxious. When he's not attacking the president for lying, he's questioning his state of mind. Quote, will President Trump deny reality on a daily basis? Will he make up his own false facts and fake stats? What will the consequences be? Close quote. In the course of passing judgment on what does and doesn't constitute truth, Stelter sounds like he's about to wet his pants over Trump. He asked journalists, quote, is the Trump presidency a criminal presidency, close quote, and, quote, are we living through a national emergency, close quote. Only on CNN could a man like this be given a show called Reliable Sources. Now, moving on to Chris Cuomo, they said, the author state, can the son of one ultra-liberal New York governor and the brother of another one be taken seriously as a nonpartisan journalist? At CNN, all things are possible, and so he can qualify for a job as anchor of Cuomo Primetime. But no observer outside of CNN with the IQ of a potato will take this man seriously. Cuomo evinces a strange disconnect with reality. He's claimed on Rolling Stone, quote, you are rarely hearing my opinion on television, close quote. Yet he bashes Trump and his voters on a daily basis. In one chat with Don Lemon in 2019, he started a chef who banned people wearing Make America Great Again hats from his restaurant. Quote, I think the more appropriate analogy to say is if people were wearing shirts that said, I hate black people, would he be okay to say, don't come into my place with that? Close quote. In 2018, he said Obama was much more popular than Trump because, quote, America at her best, by her nature, leads with her heart, not her hate. Close quote. No opinion there. Well, you got a pretty good idea there of what CNN is all about, if you haven't didn't already know. Now let's listen to a few more sound bites from programs on another Trump-hater television news organization, MSNBC. Please play soundbite two.
So, Kennedy, Beto O'Rourke. Beto, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And let's talk about what you've been saying. You said that the president's words have animated this violence. Explain the connection between words and shooting people.
When he was making his case to the country, announcing his candidacy for the presidency, he talks about Mexican immigrants as rapists and criminals, repeatedly warned of invasions from Mexico and Central America, called asylum seekers animals, called them killers, called them predators, put their children in cages, deported their parents back to the very countries from which they fled. And you talked about this a little bit in the run-up to this interview at that rally in May in Florida when he's warning of this invasion and he says, how do we stop these people? Someone yells out, shoot them.
Yeah.
And the crowd roars their approval and he smiles. He says, this is okay. And in the face of gun violence that has claimed 40,000 lives just in the last year, he's done nothing. He's complicit, actually corrupted by the NRA. So he's driving a lot of this violence. And I want to make clear, racism in America did not start with Donald Trump, but he's given it new life. He's welcomed it into the open. And along with that, the violence that drove somebody literally 600 miles from Allen, Texas to El Paso to kill 22 people in this city. So we've got to connect those.
Welcome back. President Trump's increasingly erratic behavior has vexed almost everyone but his most ardent followers. And that erratic behavior seems to be fueling a growing number of potential primary bids against President Trump. President Trump's communications director for all of 11 days in 2017. Now, Scaramucci has publicly turned against the president this summer, and he's asking Republicans to do the same. He's not saying he's running for president. Anthony Scaramucci, he is the director and managing partner of Skybridge Capital and, of course, a former Trump supporter. Hello, sir.
But what I am doing is I'm going to put a coalition together to help the Republican Party re-engineer itself in time, because we're watching a full-blown meltdown of the President of the United States. I'm actually sorry to see it.
Yeah, this is really interesting. More than one-third of Hispanic voters in Texas cast their ballots for Donald Trump back in 2016. But a new survey shows his support among the demographic there and in nine other battleground states has actually dipped ahead of the 2020 election. Let's bring in former special assistant to President Obama, Stephanie Valencia. She is co-founder of Equus Labs, an organization that is working to create a better understanding of the Latin American electorate. So this survey is so interesting. It looks at gender, it looks at different states. What's your takeaway from it, Stephanie?
Well, the bottom line here is that Latinos will be the X factor in 2020. There will be 32 million eligible Latino voters heading into 2020, and we will play a really important role in the places where we always have, like the Mountain West and places like New Mexico, Colorado, and Nevada, where we've slowly seen those states turn blue.
Happened, and he wasn't there. Then the White House press secretary put out a formal statement explaining that the reason Trump had not gone to the climate session was because instead he was having bilateral meetings with the leaders of India and Germany. Well, here's a picture of a climate meeting. There's the leader of Germany. There's the leader of India. There is Trump's empty chair. Trump did not skip the climate meeting so that he could meet with them. They were at the meeting, and he wasn't there. Then there was this worrying exchange.
Second thoughts on escalating the trade war with China?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Second thoughts?
Might as well.
You have second thoughts about escalating the war with China?
I have second thoughts about everything.
Yeah, sure. I have second thoughts about everything. Trump's top economic advisors had to go on TV almost immediately to say the president hadn't heard the question or actually had meant the opposite of what you actually heard. Also, there was this.
China called last night our top trade people and said, let's get back to the table.
Mr. President, I asked you, could you tell us a little bit more about the call you referred to? When will the next round of negotiations with China start?
Well, we've gotten two calls and very, very good calls, very productive calls.
Okay, so this is where the deep voice narrator comes in and says, in fact, there were no calls. From CNN Today, quote, aides privately conceded the phone calls Trump described didn't happen the way he said they did. Instead, two officials said Trump was eager to project optimism that might boost markets and conflated comments from China's vice premier with direct communication from the Chinese. Which honestly, if the president of the United States lied about phone calls with China in order to boost the markets, that seems pretty bad. But it's probably better than him just making up phone calls or maybe having said calls take place only in his mind. While everything else was going on in the news, Donald Trump canceled a trip that he was supposed to leave for this weekend to Poland. The president said that he isn't going because of the hurricane that is bearing down on the east coast of Florida. One of the consequences of Trump canceling this trip is not just that Trump won't be in Poland meeting with the president of Poland, but he also was set to meet on this trip with the president of Ukraine. That was the plan. But now that meeting is canceled, too. And that may be just the way it goes. A hurricane shows up and you call off your meetings with the president of Poland and the president of Ukraine. Or it might be more consequential than that. Ukraine, of course, is the country that Russia invaded in 2014 and from which Russia seized the part of Ukraine that is Crimea. It was the first time since World War II that the borders of a country in Europe were changed by outside military force. In response to Russia invading and seizing Crimea and waging a low-grade war in eastern Ukraine ever since, Western nations, led by the United States, took steps to punish Russia. There were strict new sanctions against the Russian oil and gas industry, for example, that really hurt the country's fragile economy. The G8 countries decided they would become the G7 instead, kicking Russia and Putin out. The U.S. Congress passed a military aid package for Ukraine to help them resist Russian military aggression. All of that happened after Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014 under President Barack Obama. And then, over the last few days, we've seen the current president, Donald Trump, repeatedly and insistently argue that Russia should be let back in to the G7.
Reincorporation. Is there anybody you're disappointed that didn't get in the race?
Okay, look at him. You notice anything? None of these papers have Donald Trump on them. He's in none of the headlines. That is exceedingly rare in the era of the ubiquitous president. And guess what? He wasn't on the front of yesterday's papers either. Look, the same three papers. So here's a question, I think, for both Democratic candidates, Democratic strategists who are thinking about how to beat Donald Trump in 2020, and the media, who is always thinking about how to cover him, particularly during the campaign and when it wraps up. Is all the attention good for Donald Trump or bad for Donald Trump? Is it good for him not to be on the front page or bad for him to not be on the front page? We're just advising him as a political strategist, and he was a person who was containable.
And I was not a reality TV show.
Yes.
So.
Like, if it wasn't reality TV, if you're just trying to get his approval rating up as high as possible, is your advice to him stay off the headlines or always be in the headlines?
I would say stay off of the headlines unless you're executing policy that is going to benefit the American people, because when he's in the headlines, it's generally bad.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think there's actually pretty consistent polling data that Trump not that often, but he goes through periods of being relatively normal, right? And over time, his poll numbers go up. And if you just over the last few weeks, with all these different things happening, notwithstanding the last couple of days, he's trending down.
Right.
So all the antics and stuff, it makes him less popular. There, it's in a pretty tight bound. But basically, I think until now, look, the economy during his presidency, even if it's not his doing, has been pretty good.
Attention is the most important commodity of our time. Facebook is worth billions of dollars, right? Because they get eyeballs and people look at it. And that, even if the polling doesn't reflect this, that there's a kind of superpower and there's a kind of power conferred on him by all the attention.
Sure. He's had a kind of malignant charisma to him, from the get-go. And people have trafficked on it. But it's also, I think, there's a particular demographic for whom him saying things that are outrageous, him insulting people, him getting into feuds with people who have comparatively less power than him, which is everyone in the country. These people really feel that he's championing them. But on the other side of it, those of us who are in the actual reality are more concerned about, what this says about policy, like about the stability of the person who has his hand on the control of the economy and the military and so on.
But there's also kind of I feel like there's a dark, also compulsive emotional attachment to the villainy.
Sure.
Right. I mean, that like that the way that he is, the way that he kind of excavates for his supporters, a sense that they're embattled and he's fighting for them. There's also a sense, Danielle, for the folks that listen to your radio show or call into it. Right. Like it's hard for everyone to break the habit of paying attention.
So it's Friday, August the 30th. This morning, we have with us Washington anchor for BBC News America, Katty Kay, Pulitzer Prize winning columnist and associate editor for The Washington Post, and MSNBC political analyst Eugene Robinson, Republican strategist and MSNBC political analyst Susan Del Percio, White House reporter for the Associated Press Jonathan Lemire, and CNBC editor-at-large John Harwood.
We're ready. We have the best people in the world ready, and they're going to help you. We're shipping food. We're shipping water. But it may be that you're going to evacuate. We're going to see what happens. We're waiting.
You know, Caddy, I had said a couple of days ago that the contempt that he showed as a hurricane was approaching Puerto Rico would obviously be contrasted by the interest he would show as it was approaching, as it moved on and was approaching an important swing state for Donald Trump in next year's election.
Yeah, I mean, he almost seemed to blame Puerto Rico for being in the eye of Dorian just a few days ago and not much concern. And now he's going to cancel a trip. This is, of course, the trip that he was meant to go to Denmark on as well. So that part of the trip had already been canceled. And you wonder whether he just didn't want to do any of these two foreign trips at all.
Well, that's quite a bit of a Trump hate there. Now, you may have recognized among those Trump haters on MSNBC, Chris Matthews and Joe Scarborough. Of course, there were some others, too. I think we had NBC's, as I said, NBC owns MSNBC, and you see some cross-pollination there. But we did hear from some people on NBC, I believe. But anyway, going back to briefly summarize that, of course, Matthews is starting out to interviewing the outrageous con man and fraud Beto O'Rourke, who is railing about Trump. And everything he says about these things are ridiculous lies. He claimed that Trump wanted to ban all Muslims. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe what happened was Trump issued an executive order banning temporarily all immigration from several Muslim-majority countries which are associated with supporting terrorism. And that was done, and it was upheld by the Supreme Court. But, of course, what's that to Beto O'Rourke, you know? What's the truth? And he goes on, 40,000 people die a year from gun violence. Well, a lot of those are suicides and gang shootings, but, of course, we have to make a big thing out of all of the and, of course, it is a big thing if you're one of the victims in a mass shooting. And we need to work on doing things that can prevent these people from getting firearms. But a big part of that, I think, is better security more than anything else. But nevertheless, moving on to other things covered there, Hispanic support for Trump is ebbing, and Trump is colluding with Putin, of course. And isn't it interesting, too, recently they said that he's got there's a malevolent charisma Trump has. It's not really Trump's – he wasn't really responsible for what's going on with the economy, but he has his hand on the economy at the same time. Right. Anyway – let's take a look here at what Bozell and Graham have to say about Matthews and Scarborough, among others. Talking about Chris Matthews, no one can quite capture the careening swings of liberal excess on cable TV quite like Matthews, who effortlessly lurches from the Obama leg thrill ovations to the Trump spit drooling rages. His metaphors are regularly as incoherent as he's unhinged. He's compared the Trumps to the Romanovs, the Russian royal family slaughtered by the communists. Who are the communists in this scenario? Are they going to kill Trump and Melania and the kids? He suggested that Trump's grown children, Donald Jr., Ivanka, and Eric, are like Saddam Hussein's murderous sons, Uday and Kusei. He's even suggested that perhaps President Trump should kill Jared Kushner. You know, quote, you know, one good thing Mussolini did was execute his son-in-law, close quote. And Joe Scarborough. They also mentioned Mika Brzezinski, his co-host on NBC. They state, if these two were conservatives, they'd generate their own weekly Saturday Night Live mockery. The former conservative Republican congressman, that's Scarborough, is former, close quote, quote unquote, in every sense. He's no longer in Congress. He has formally and most publicly quit the GOP, and he stopped pretending that he's on the right. Mika is Mika is Mika. We all await the first memorable thought coming from this woman. Mr. and Mrs., Scarborough and them and Mika are married, are true ideological chameleons whose colors change effortlessly to blend with their posture du jour. Their position du jour. In other words, their position of the day. At the start of the campaign, they were happily hosting and toasting Trump. In November 2015, Joe touted Trump's, quote, gut instinct and strength, close quote. And in January 2016, he said that the sight of Trump's plane landing in Iowa, quote, was like the Pope had landed with the Middle East Peace Pact to end 3,000 years of war, close quote. But when they said something that he didn't like, Trump took a shot at them, and they came unhinged. Today, they are the perfect launch pad for MSNBC's daily left-wing character assassination campaign against the president. Smug in their hypocrisy. I'm sorry. Scarborough has claimed that sources, quote unquote, told him Trump was suffering from, quote, early stages of dementia, unquote, and smeared his supporters as frenzied fascists looking like, quote, a Mussolini rally, close quote. He said that Trump's separation of illegally immigrating parents and children was, quote, just like the Nazis, close quote. And this, quote, tyrannical president, unquote, had, quote, used Stalinist barbs to attack the free press, close quote. Days before the midterm elections, the new Mrs. Scarborough lectured, quote, if you want a slight check on this man and his unrelenting race to the finish here to make sure he can continue destroying this country, you might want to vote all D, in other words, Democrats, even if it's not your party this time around, close quote. Well, I think you get the drift here. Let's hear a few more clips from the big three television networks, CBS, NBC, owner of MSNBC, and ABC. Please play soundbite 3.
This, in an extraordinary rebuke, the House voted to condemn President Trump's attacks against four congresswomen of color as racist. The measure, which passed mostly along party lines last night, exposed deep partisan rifts. Only four Republicans voted in favor. Before the vote, Republicans objected when House Speaker Nancy Pelosi used the word racist to describe the president's tweets.
Every single member of this institution, Democratic and Republican, should join us in condemning the president's racist tweets.
I was just going to give the General Speaker of the House if she would like to rephrase that comment.
I have cleared my remarks with the parliamentarian before I read them.
Republicans tried to strike Pelosi's comments from the record. They said she violated House rules, but their effort failed. In a cabinet meeting yesterday, the president again defended his original tweet, telling the progressive lawmakers to go back to where they came from.
That's what they say about our country. It's my opinion they hate our country, and that's not good. It's not acceptable.
The four freshman congresswomen apparently targeted by the president are Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, and Ayanna Presley. Together, they are known as the Squad. The representatives sat down with Gayle yesterday on Capitol Hill for their only joint interview. They shared what it's like to be the target of the most powerful politician in the country.
Quoting the president yesterday, you all are people who hate our country with a passion. You hate Jewish people, and you love enemies like Al-Qaeda. You hear those statements coming from the President of the United States to describe you all, and you think what?
I think that America has always been a story, and America has always been about the triumph of people who fight for everyone versus those who want to preserve rights for just a select few. And there is no bottom to the barrel of vitriol that will be used and weaponized to stifle those who want to advance rights for all people in the United States.
We can talk about and spin out on about hateful words, which are a predictable prompt by the occupant of this White House, and I call him that, not because I don't have respect for the Oval Office.
But it sounds like you don't have respect for the Oval Office when you call the President of the United States the occupant.
No, because he is only occupying the space. He does not embody the principles, the responsibility, the grace, the integrity of a true president. And so for that reason, I'm not dishonoring the office. He does every day. Mm-hmm. This is a distraction. This is a disruption on our leading and legislating and governing on the issues of care and concern and consequence of the American people.
What did you think when you heard the tweet?
For me,
I'm hearing about this from folks saying, did you see what the president just said? At the same time that I'm getting text messages from people saying, Rashida, what can we do? I heard ICE is now knocking on doors without warrants. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to represent my district. It's a very diverse district, 20 different ethnicities. And I'm trying to fight on their behalf, trying to make sure that they have a voice here. At the same time, I'm dealing with the biggest bully I've ever had to deal with in my lifetime and trying to push back on that and trying to do the job that we all have been sent here mm-hmm. to do, which is centered around the people at home. This is a distraction. This is a person that really wants to vilify, demonize not only immigrants, but even communities of color, as many of my sisters here have been talking about. It is very much a distraction, getting us unfocused.
It's interesting that you all use the word distraction, that he is trying to distract away from real issues. Mm. You know, it's been said about the four of you that the four of you are a distraction, that you're playing right into the president's hands. What do you say to people, and you have your critics too, who say that you all are also a distraction?
The insinuation of that question in itself is a distraction. I think he wants you to focus on that. Mm-hmm. And you should be asking, why is it that we are being criticized? Mm-hmm. What is it that we bring to this body?
I'll tell you what we bring.
Exactly.
We're an extension of a movement in our country that wants Medicare for all, that wants us to end mass incarceration, that wants us to push back against the attacks on communities of color. I mean, I think all of us have incredibly strong residents in our district that have spoke volumes in electing people like us.
Last night on this show, I discussed information that wasn't ready for reporting. I repeated statements a single source told me about the president's finances and loan documents with Deutsche Bank, saying, if true, as I discussed the information, was simply not good enough. I did not go through the rigorous verification and standards process here at MSNBC before repeating what I heard from my source. Had it gone through that process, I would not have been permitted to report it. I should not have said it on air or posted it on Twitter. I was wrong to do so. This afternoon, attorneys for the president sent us a letter asserting the story is false. They also demanded a retraction. Tonight, we are retracting the story.
There's a lot a president can do by herself, and then the rest of it, we got to pull Congress in. And to make that happen, you need crowds like this. People are going to keep pushing from the outside. I figure you got a strong president pushing from the White House. You got people all across this country who are motivated. That's how you hold Congress accountable. That's how you make real change.
Senator Elizabeth Warren has been drawing large crowds as she makes her case to Democratic voters. An estimated 15,000 supporters there at a rally in Seattle last weekend. But how much does crowd size really matter? Is it a meaningful indicator of electability and a sign that she's underrated by the polls? We ask 538's Nate Silver, do you buy that?
So the big problem with presidential elections is that people are always fighting the last war. Donald Trump turned out very large and enthusiastic crowds throughout 2016, bigger than Hillary Clinton's, as of course the president is still fond of pointing out.
We had the biggest crowd you've ever seen.
And Trump beat his polls in the key electoral college states on Election Day. So it might be natural to assume that big crowds are picking up on something that the polls are missing. But over the long run, this indicator doesn't hold up. Both Trump and Barack Obama drew big crowds on the trail, but there are also plenty of candidates who drew large crowds and then flopped. That includes John Kerry in 2004, Mitt Romney in 2012, and of course, Bernie Sanders drew huge crowds in 2016. To be fair, he did win some of the states where those rallies were held, but he didn't win the Democratic nomination.
Well, this weekend's White House Twitter rant sparked the hashtag racist-in-chief. After he told progressive freshman congresswomen to go back to the countries they came from. And this morning, Senator Lindsey Graham kept it going on Fox and Friends, calling them communists who hate our country.
Oh, God.
So let's start with this. Hey. Some of these women, like Rashida Tlaib, born in Detroit, Michigan. Anya Pressley, born in Cincinnati. Born in Cincinnati. American citizen. Ilhan Omar has been a citizen since 2000 when she was 17. Now look, maybe this is all political force or maybe it, I don't know what it is, but this is very dangerous.
Well, he needs to be medicated. Number one. The other thing is, I really think that he knows that they're born here. He knows it.
Yeah.
It's just like he knew that Obama was not born in Kenya. He just does this as a racist whistle to people who follow him. Yeah. And apparently they're just as big racist as he is. And
I
don't like it either.
I don't think anybody likes it.
And I think what was really surprising to me on top of it was, and I haven't looked at it recently, but something like 90,000 people liked that tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that say about those people and the people that we live with every single day in our country?
Well, there you go. The mainstream media, including the big three television networks, obviously, like a lot of people who don't like Trump and his supporters, don't like Trump and his supporters. So I hope you got the gist of all that. The squad, these four left-wing congresswomen, they're sisters. They're trying to help all people in the U.S., but somehow or other, it always seems to be so-called people of color. That is, if not if you're not white. And oh my God, ICE is knocking on doors without warrants. We can't have that. And then you heard Lawrence O'Donnell, the former Democratic Party strategist, apologizing for falsely claiming that he was told by a single unnamed source that Russian billionaires with ties to Trump signed off on loans for Trump. Of course, this ties Trump into Putin again, of course. I'm sorry, Russian billionaires with ties to Putin signed off on loans with Trump for Trump. And on and on it goes. Clearly, the mainstream news media is largely owned and controlled by people who hate President Trump, along with America as we have known it, and is filled with many left-wing radicals and Democratic Party operatives masquerading as journalists and using everything in their power to turn the public against Trump and bring about the transformation of the country into what they regard as a utopia, but what in reality would be a third-world socialist hellhole. Thus far, despite their massive and relentless campaign of hate and lies against the president and his supporters, they've been unable to destroy Trump, and many of them seem to be starting to lose their minds over this failure. They nevertheless remain totally committed to their goal. If more of those members of the public who are under the spell of the mainstream leftist media could be woken up to what is actually going on, we could get more people to turn away from the media and thus lessen its tremendous power and influence. This can be done through things like boycotts, information campaigns. How about TV specials exposing these people for who they are, what they're about? A nationwide billboard campaign would be something too. But of course, that would cost a lot of money. Hopefully, the money can be found. With much of what people see and hear in the media under the control of these left-leaning elitists, this task will not be easy. But much more can and must be done toward that end if we're going to preserve America as we have known it. Well, that's it for today's show. Hope you found it of interest. We'll be back 2 weeks from today in the same time slot. Have a good night.